industry works on assemblies. We work on bundles, as Alan told you, and I'll explain. The fuel comes in, and most of the material test reactors from Research Reactors is about 3 to 4 foot long. It has ends that they can maneuver it within their reactor facility that are all aluminum. So when it comes in, we actually chop that off because it's just wasting our space. We don't chop the fuel, we just chop the aluminum on top. And then that fuel gets put into what we call an L bundle. And that's what this is. It's about 12 foot long, and we can basically put anywhere from 3 to 5 fuel assemblies in an L bundle. And that helps us maximize our space. We are mostly aluminum. About 90% of our fuel is aluminum platted. We do have some zinc and some stainless. We also are mostly HEU, which is highly enriched uranium, so that's above the 20% uranium, U-235. And we have every shape, size, enrichment under the sun. We have every kind of fuel you can imagine, whereas the commercial reactors are dealing with one type of specific fuel at maybe 1 or 2 burn-ups. We've got everything. We even have pie-shaped fuel. So we basically, we are storing it in our reactor basin. We've had to, it's underwater. We have done that for many years, and we are projecting to have to do that for quite a few more years. So we had SRNL, which is our laboratory, go and do an evaluation of how long can L area sustain and be safe to store this fuel. And they came back and said that based on all of the information they had and our water quality control system, we could last at least an additional 50 years. Now, there were some things that we have to do, and we're going down that path. One of them was like concrete, ensuring the concrete. So we were able to take advantage of the ARRA program. As Rob told you this morning, they were closing down C reactor. C reactor and L reactor were done at the same time. We actually went in and took core samples of the concrete and the rebar from L, or C, not L, from C reactor, and then sent that to the lab. The lab was able to do analysis on that to show our concrete is actually stronger than what we require it to be, and it's getting stronger the longer and the older it ages. There's some other things on the fuel that the laboratory is working on, just investigating corrosivity of the fuel and how fast that it would degrade. So they're looking at that and things that we can actually go in and visibly see. They came up with a table. Once you put it in an L bundle, you can't see the fuel, so you can't tell what's going on inside that bundle. They've actually come up with a way that you can reproduce visual inspection of fuel inside the bundle, where they'd actually remove it on a table, have it set up with measurements, and you can actually take pictures and videograph what you're seeing to see if there's any degradation of that fuel over time. Now, we've only done the development work. We haven't actually identified or looked at any of the fuel yet. We right now are about 90% full with our rack space, and if we were to continue on without processing any fuel, we would exceed our capacity, and there's a chart we'll get to show you that. Right now we're at 3060 right now bundles. So the amended rod that Alan talked about allows us to continue to support the FRR program and their return receipts, and also our VRR program, which is funded by Nuclear Energy. They do not fund us any money, but the DRR program is funded by Nuclear Energy. We also get fuel from the Office of Science. That's our high isotope flux reactor, type 3, you'll hear it called. We, because it is a circular fuel, you see, we actually have to store this separately. The inner core is taken out and stored separately from the outer core. We only have 120 spots for HIFR, and that's full. So with the AROD processing decision, that'll give us an opportunity to assist science, because they have storage. It's at Oak Ridge, but their storage is limited. So they're getting backed up, and they would like to be able to process some of that fuel so they could ship us some more fuel. We also have fuel that's in isolation cans. This was of concern to our defense board. These cans, this is fuel that when they did a transfer from the various basins on site to consolidate into L, some of the fuel they knew was already pitted, was already cut, either intentionally or accidentally. for some examinations. So this fuel is actually put into a can where it's isolated from the basin water. So it's stored inside the basin, but that can and the fuel do not interact with the water. Whereas if you put fuel in an L bundle, you can't see it here, but there are holes on the top and on the bottom, so the basin water can circulate through those bundles. So here's our capacity chart. This is for bundled fuel. We'll start with our white line. This is our capacity. That's the number of rack spaces we have, 3650. The dotted red line is our storage, what our inventory is. You see we're getting pretty close. The red is showing what's coming in, and we're expecting about 80 bundles in 15. The green is showing what's going out to the canyon. So that looks like about 70 to 75 going out to the canyon for processing. What else was I going to say? It also shows the projections. Over here you'll see the projections of bundles that will be coming in. Japan is on here because there's potential that they will get an extension and be allowed to ship past the 2019 date, as when the FRR program under NEPA is supposed to end. But right now there's a potential that they'll get an extension, so for us, we have to project that into our capacity charts. This is our hyper storage. Again, you'll see our capacity line at 120. This is our inventory, and it'll show we'll start actually processing hyper. The intent is the end of 2016. So we have to ship out before we can receive any. So we'll start shipping out in 16, and they'll start shipping in 2017, is the plan. You probably heard of the Canadian, and I apologize, your slides are going to not be updated from what's up here, so there'll be a couple numbers that you'll probably have to update on your copies. I'm sorry. One of being AECL. AECL is now Canadian Nuclear Laboratories. They went through a changeover in the fall. We have a contract, or NNSA has a contract with them to return their nuclear national research, universal, and national research experimental fuel, or UNRX. The problem we have with that is this fuel is like 10 feet tall. Our facility couldn't handle it. We couldn't unload it. We have what we call a shielded transfer system, and it's kind of like a can opener is the best way to describe it. You've got a cylinder here. Because our transfer bay is only 30 feet deep, it comes in the legal weight truck cask by NAC, and that's like a 17 to 20 foot cask. We wouldn't have enough water protection for our workers. So we have a shielded transfer system, and it's basically you have a well in the transfer bay where the cask, it's a dry well. The cask comes in, it's put into that dry well. We have this can that comes across the top and mates up with the cask so we can pull the fuel up into that can, and then that can and the fuel moves back over to where the water is, and then the fuel can be pushed down into the water and then handled through our normal operations. Well, with this being 10 foot long fuel, we didn't have that capability. So AECL at the time, now CNL, had agreed to provide $10 million of prepayment in their foreign research reactor fuels. Because if it's a high-income country, they have to pay I'm trying to think of the words that they use in the Federal Register. They pay a fee based on the kilograms of uranium that they're sending us that we get to use for infrastructure or operations. So they prepaid that fee so that we can make modifications. Those modifications are underway. We have contracted with NAC, since they were the original designers of the STS system, to do those modifications. They have fabricated them. We were expecting those back in September, and hopefully they're on the road to Savannah River today. So we should have those complete by February so that we can then start those receipts. Let's see. This is a multi-year campaign for them. It's probably a 2 to 3 year campaign for them to remove all that fuel. And it is U.S. origin. The fuel was used in their Moly 99 production, which is part of the medical isotopes. And we're currently not projecting any other modifications to L Basin. So we haven't heard of any other strange fuels out there we can't handle yet. So our current management approach is to continue with wet storage. Our life cycle baseline does show dry storage because dry storage is more costly, so it better informs our liability costs. One of the things we have to do each year is a EM liability assessment. So by using the dry storage costs, it's more than if we were to process all the fuel. We will process up to 1,000 bundles and 200 hyper cores, and we'll continue operations in the Bell Basin. Processing, Alan's talked a little bit about this year. I talked about the SRE. So we actually processed 147 bundles. That's bundles that were removed from our inventory. And we did no recovery of uranium due to the U-232 that was in there, and that would not meet any of our fuel fabrication specs. We've also, and this slide is another one that you'll have to update the number on. We processed up to 40 bundles under the 1,000 bundles of the AROD that was through December of this past year. H. Canyon is capable of processing the remaining aluminum fuel in El Basin, but we do not have a programmatic decision to do that at this time. And as he already talked about, they can't process the desert and the sands. And Karen had asked about the Idaho swap. In the past, there was a project between Idaho and Savannah River to do an exchange of fuel where we would get their aluminum and they would get our non-aluminum. There was no funding for that at the time, so it kind of fell off of the radar screen. There was a meeting, a working group of spent fuel across EM that included NE, and that was put as one of the items to go after and work. So I would hope to see a lot more activity on the Idaho exchange in the future, but it's going to depend on budgets. And some of the big things is we're going to have to get a transportation package that's going to work at both sites. Well, dry storage. A lot of commercial is using dry storage, these concrete casks to store their fuel. We actually assumed that in our life cycle. In 2012, I believe, SRNL did a study for us and an estimate to go through what we would have to do that. And because we have such a variety of fuels, it's not an easy process. Most of them fit into an L bundle, so they were able to come up with the majority going into a standard form, but then we have to have specials for those fuels that don't, like the pie shape, the hyper cores. They all have to go into a different type of format for the dry storage. The other problem with our fuel is it's aluminum, and aluminum will hide water. So there's an issue of how fast do you dry it, because if you dry it too fast, you'll generate hydrides, and that will cause the fuel to be corroded, or you could not get all the hydrogen out, and you could have a gas generation issue over the years that it's stored. So our report showed there was additional study that needed to be done on how to dry the fuel. Now, Idaho does have dry storage, but the difference there is theirs is not a closed system. Theirs is open to the atmosphere, so they don't have the generation issue of gas where we would. People get confused sometimes when you say you got to do more research. Ours would actually be closed, similar to how commercial closes theirs. Storage pad. The 2012 report envisioned that storage pad being an L area. There was some talk of maybe there's some there's some savings that could be done if you do a joint pad, especially if the glass cylinders from DWPF can be put onto a storage pad in a concrete cast. So there was an initial study done to look at that. There's more work that needs to be done on that study. It's not clear if it would save money because of the transport that you have to do, and also making sure you have the equipment available in the right location. So there's more work to do on that. So in summary, our fuel is safely stored wet in El Basin. Some fuel is being processed. We're very proud of that. We have looked at alternatives to wet storage. We think wet storage is the safest for our fuel at this time. And we need a departmental decision on the future of our fuel versus storage versus processing. Any questions?
I was looking at the PowerPoint. And
yes, sir.
On page 4, it says there's 18,400 assemblies.
Approximately, yes, sir.
Are those aluminum or non-aluminum assemblies?
90% of those would be aluminum. That's usually we have a 90 to 10% split between aluminum and non-aluminum. We no longer receive any non-aluminum fuel, though. The non-aluminum that we have is from past operations.
Okay, and I'm looking at a DOE 2011 publication. It said at the time there were 21,000 fuel assemblies in the L Basin, so it looks like it's actually gone down since 2011.
Well, we have processed it's a total of 187 bundles now. When the fuel that we did for SRE and also for the campaign of the AROD. And each bundle can hold anywhere from 3 to 5 assemblies.
And I know we've had this discussion. You were not the presenter when this came up before this committee. But we've had this discussion before about the storage of these materials in L Basin beyond 2019.
Yes, sir.
You've indicated that they are considered to be safe for another 50 years. What's the basis for that statement?
That was the report that SRNL did in, I think it was 2011. They went in and looked at the structural concrete of the facility. They looked at the fuel itself, and they looked at our water quality. And based on all of those, but with corrosion and everything else, that they felt the facility would last another 50 years. Now, we have work that we have to do to maintain that report and maintain that facility safe. And that's our water quality that we do, where we check the pH, we check for radionuclides, we make sure we check conductivity. We also do have to do a structural check for integrity, and they actually will examine whatever exterior walls are available. And then we also did the core samples from C reactor to see just how strong is that concrete. And is it meeting the requirements that were specified at the time, and it's actually stronger than what it was specified to do.
The current rate of use of H Canyon for processing of these materials, how long would it take to eliminate the 18,400 assemblies?
I think the report, when they did an evaluation back in the past, it was going to take 10 years, 10 years to complete all of it.
10 years from now or 10 years from when it started?
From when it started at that time. It was a 10-year time frame.
So that was, it started in 2000?
That was when they did that evaluation. And I'm thinking now we're still saying about...
It would still be
10 years.
10 years, because right now, you know, we're going at a fairly slow phase. We haven't even got cycles up and running, so once we get those, it would be, if you were running full speed, it would be about a 10-year program.
So if we continue at the current pace now, it might all be gone by 2025?
We'd have to accelerate a little bit, but yes, sir.
Are we bringing in any more?
Yes, sir. We do get receipts from both FRR and DRR. I think we're expecting around 80 bundles next year from FRR and DRR, 80 to 90.
Tell me, I know that when we had an earthquake.
Yes, sir.
In February.
The summer? It was February, and then also I think there was one in the summer. Yes.
In 2014. And I remember when they happened, I actually contacted some people with the site and inquired, you know, is everything okay? And I was told everything was fine. But what, when something like that happens, what is done to ensure the integrity of these of L Basin?
We have procedures for when abnormal conditions occur, and they actually had to pull out those procedures on an earthquake. And when we do our documented safety analysis, it has assumptions in there on those type of natural hazards. But we already have procedures in place to go and do those checks. So they were actually doing those checks the day after. They had actually had them completed by the time I got in at 8:30. The next morning. So they go in and they do the structural integrity tests that we talk about that we need to maintain the facility safe anyway. They go and they recheck everything to make sure they don't have cracks, that they haven't lost power. They go in and do all that checks. They have to check the level of the water again. So there are procedures in place for when those things happen that our operators then, instead of doing their normal rounds, that becomes a priority for the day. Thank you.
Okay, I'm probably confused, so I'm going to explain to you what I think.
Okay, I'm sorry if I confused you.
Can straighten me out, and then I'll ask you a question. So, because the original EIS was to do Mount Duluth, to process any fuel, you have to get an amended ROD to say we can process that fuel other than Mount Duluth. Is that right?
That is correct, except for the vulnerable fuel that we processed.
Right.
We didn't have to have a change on that.
Okay. So, in FY23 and 24, there's an awful lot of fuel that's going out. Is that going out by reprocessing, sending for a change?
Yes, ma'am. On that slide? Yes. The only way we can send it out right now is through H Canyon.
Do we know that there is no issue about getting amended rods?
No, that I think shows the 1,000 bundles. I don't think that's looking at trying to de-inventory the whole basin because of the heifer. The heifer is what throws off that 10-year time frame.
Okay. All right. So these have already been approved. The process, these guys have already been approved.
For 1,000 bundles, yes, ma'am.
Talking about, I'm looking right here where it says the majority of the non-aluminum clad fuel is pitted or corroded.
Yes.
Are we considering, could we put that in dry storage? Would that be, are we considering splitting the fuel and putting some in dry storage and processing some?
That's what we would do. If we had a processing decision, then the stainless and the zerk would go into dry storage. Now, the reason the Idaho swap makes sense is they already have all the dry storage capability and the equipment up there to do the dry storage.
Oh, so you would swap it for them to store it up there?
Yes, ma'am.
Gotcha.
Now, that 10-year time frame to process fuel does not include the Idaho material, correct? So if we were to get the Idaho aluminum...
It does.
It does? I'm sorry. It does include it. I'm sorry. It does include the Idaho material. I was mistaken.
So now is the time and the day when we have public comments. So if there's any member of the public who wants to speak, or hide behind that.
Sure. Thanks very much. I am Tom Clements, Director of Savannah Riverside Watch. I see we're ending early today, so I'll only take about an hour. I'm glad to get out of here. Thank you. Just a few comments about some of the issues discussed today, starting with the Barnwell and DHEC issue. A couple of representatives from Sierra Club who were involved in the court case were not able to be here today. I'm not involved with it, but I have... been looking at the issue, and Ms. Patterson, you ask about getting a copy of a license. I would recommend you go online and get the court ruling from July 30th. You can find it pretty easily if you just search for the Administrative Law Court and rulings and just find it. I'll read a couple of things that are important that the court decided on. There had been an earlier court ruling, and this reversed some of the things. Neither the 2005 order, the remand order, nor any portion of the record or the briefs contain any evidence that Kim Nuclear has taken a single action to prevent a single raindrop from falling onto active vaults and trenches. The ruling goes into this quite extensively. The DHEC hasn't taken any action, and then the remedy from the Administrative Law Court, they conclude that Kim Nuclear's license to operate the facility is invalid based on the requirements that you are requested to see. However, the appellant, Sierra Club, informed the court at oral argument that it does not seek revocation of the license. It asked simply that DHEC enforce its regulations and that Kim Nuclear comply. And that was to cover the trenches to stop rainwater going directly into the trenches, but that's what has been stayed. So... there, I did talk to the lawyer for Sierra Club the other day, so there will be, you know, whatever proceedings the court could require them to cover the trenches while they're active. So that's really the issue that I see that's hanging, but it's worth a look at the ruling. And continuing talking about DHEC, I do really appreciate what they're doing concerning holding DOE to the federal facility agreement. And I certainly agree with DHEC and some of what Savannah Riverside has said, that they need more money to continue a pace with the high-level waste program. So they do have at least my support, and I know there's general support in the public for increasing the funding, which has been hard to get from Congress. We heard that the high-level waste program got, I believe it was $547 million this year. Now, I want to contrast that with what the situation with the MOX program, which we know has been quite troubled. The MOX program, the figure I have is $345 million for fiscal year 2015 for MOX plant construction and other costs. We saw some of the breakdown that hadn't been really defined yet. And as far as my understanding, it's unclear how much actual construction of the MOX plant is going to get. The media continues to report it's $345 million, but that's really sloppy journalism. It hasn't been broken down because there are a lot of other costs that could go into that. If $345 million is determined to go to actual MOX plant construction, I don't know where the support costs are going to come from. That wasn't clarified to me by OMB. As I determine it, to continue the MOX project, it needs about $800 million a year. That's why DOE says it isn't sustainable. Operation of the plant alone, as I've said before, and as you can read in the budget and in the plutonium disposition report that DOE prepared in April, is $543 million a year, as much as the high-level waste program. The money simply isn't there. And I keep asking, where's the money? And I hear no answer from the politicians, none whatsoever. So based on the fact that the money isn't there and alternatives need to be pursued, I am gathering that the recommendation on February 2nd from the administration to Congress is going to be, once again, place the facility on coal standby. The request may be like it was last year, around $200 million. And they're going to put it again at Congress's feet to come up with the money. They did not come up with the money this year. $345 million is not even half what the project needs. So this situation is going to drag on. The report on alternatives is due 120 days after the omnibus was signed into law, which, I don't know, around December 10th, 12th, 15th or something. So I don't know what that's going to say. I know that there's a couple of plutonium disposition reports coming out from the public interest community. One was supposed to be released this week. I don't think it has. There's another one upcoming to try to continue the debate on alternatives. We didn't hear, just a couple more items and then I'll conclude. We didn't hear anything about the German spent fuel issue. As you know, there's a move to import 457 casks of graphite spent fuel in the form of balls. And it's been presented that that material would be brought to Savannah Riverside for disposition. Savannah Riverside is not a disposition site. High-level waste has to go to a repository under U.S. law. So I was in Germany for a full week back in September, had a lot of talks and news conferences all over the place, and ended in Berlin meeting with a number of Bundestag members and their staff. So the issue is still being discussed in Germany as to what their position is about it. I know that the state government, North Rhine-Westphalia, is their first option for at least part of the fuel that it do come to the United States. There's a couple of legal opinions in Germany that it is illegal to export commercial spent fuel, and these were commercial reactors. They were connected to the grid, though there's been an attempt to redefine them as research reactors. I think one of those legal documents has been translated in English, and I'm looking for it to be released at any time. But this issue is going to continue. I imagine I'm going to go back to Germany to have discussions about that with officials and others over there. And I just wanted to conclude by mentioning that I'm going to leave, only thing for the record is a news release on the issue of money that was taken out of the cleanup program back in FY 2012 and transferred to the program to advocate for small modular reactors at Savannah Riverside. As I understand it, any pursuit of small modular reactors at Savannah Riverside is concluded. You didn't see anything in the funding that there's an Office of Nuclear Energy program to pursue SMRs at Savannah Riverside, and that's why, in my opinion, the program got into trouble. It was not done in conjunction with the Office of Nuclear Energy. There was no funding for it. Some of the money was taken out of cleanup accounts, general and administrative cleanup accounts to promote small modular reactors. I cannot determine if that money has been put back into the cleanup accounts. It was 2012, and I'm in contact with certain people in Washington to figure out what happened.